The following recording is offered by the Village Zendo. For more information, please visit villagezendo.org.
Good morning. This beautiful September day. You know, as I began to take notes for this talk, I looked at the blue sky, a slightly cooler air we've been blessed with the last few days, and the sense that the sun's angle shifted. Autumn approaching. And I felt such appreciation for this place on this planet where we are here, on this island, and at this time of the world. Even now, the day as Climate Change Week begins, we're going to be reminded of the critical danger to what we have known as life. Even now, what we think of as life, let's appreciate it. This autumn, this time. Even what seems to me to be inconceivable changes that are going on in the world. We must look at them as reality. And not think that we're perceiving reality, as McLuhan said, in a rearview mirror. And that's true of so much that is going on in the world. The whole story of who settled this land. Was it the Dutch or the English? Or was it the Lenape people who grew corn and beans here before the English came? The Europeans arrived? And who were the earlier people that the Lenape pushed out? What other forms of life were here? It seems to me it's really appropriate to remember those whom we can remember, those from whom the land was taken, and who were pushed back and are still being pushed back on reservations in the Midwest. So these days, I think we're all being called to reevaluate our idea of history, of how things came to be in our nation today. You know, we may feel really sad about the history, troubled by our own ignorance. So whether it's treatment of Native Americans, or the Mexican settlers who settled the Southwest, or slaves arriving from Africa. We've all been alerted to by that incredible 1619 project. Or Muslims that are living in the Northeast. Or immigrants from anywhere. We're constantly being called to shift our understanding and to accept responsibility. and change the way we think about the way things are. Throughout all of history, populations have moved and changed. But now we're in time of a great monumental change. So it's not surprising that there's pushback. Change can be so unsettling. You know, we're without change, we're very comfortable. This is the way I do things. This is the way my life is. This is the way I figured it out. This is history. And now, because of the realities around us, it's hard to find a place that, in our own minds, that is not roiling with change. Oh no, that's not exactly the way it was. So, those of us gathered here, you know, I think we have an attunement to the notion of peace. Peace in the world, peace with our communities, peace in our own minds and hearts. Probably that's why we walk through the door and we come to sit zazen. Join with others. Quiet, relational space where we can simply be together. But we can't stay there. Even if we feel peaceful and feel this will be like now really understand the suffering of others, the suffering of the poor, which we can see the minute we walk out the door. Those who are othered. When we see that, can we allow ourselves just to be at ease? Do we really just want to settle into great peace? So that's a question that is addressed so beautifully throughout the Zen tradition, and in particular the koan that we're studying this month in the Path of Koan. It appears in the Gateless Gate as case 46, and in the Book of Serenity as case 79. And here's how it goes. Master Sakiso, so that would be the Zen master, said, from the top of a pole 100 feet high, how do you step forward? An ancient master said that one sitting atop a pole 100 feet high, even if she has attained it, has not yet been truly enlightened. She must step forward from the pole 100 feet high and manifest her body in the 10 directions. So the question is, how do you step forward from the top of a pole 100 feet high? How do you step forward from the 11th floor, 588 Broadway? An ancient master said that one sitting atop a pole 100 feet high, even if he has attained it, has not yet been truly enlightened. They must step forward from the pole 100 feet high and manifest their body in the 10 directions. Consider what that means to each of us now. This little community that gathers to find some peace of mind in the midst of constant change, to find some sense of connection, clarity. How does this koan relate to us? to your life. You know, originally this koan, you could say, was kind of pointing at people who seek kind of a passive samadhi, a refuge, no longer wanting to relate to the world, to move away from the marketplace. But yes, it also serves those of us who come here a couple of times a week, who move in and out of the marketplace, into our zazen and back out in the world. Because we may still be treasuring or holding some notion of a perfect space, some understanding of how things are that is comfortable and without risk. Perhaps we too become too satisfied with our understanding. No matter how progressive and spiritual we may consider ourselves. And I think that's one of the reasons why we work with koans. They're tricky. That's why we always have to stop and say, what does this mean to me in my daily conduct? In my mind, in my relationship with others. Otherwise, it's like a crossword puzzle. It's like an intellectual game. And this koan tells me continuously, are you doing enough? Are you awake? Are you willing to face the continuously changing reality around? There's so much of life available to us when we open our eyes, when we let go of knowing. We have to let go of our comfortable intellectual attainments and see reality as it arises in front of us. We have to step off the pole. What we think we have, what we think we know, and move into this charging, roiling sea of reality. Continuous waves of change. Consider the idea of gender, of race that was prevailing just a few years ago, accepted, utterly changed now. It's very exciting. But it becomes challenging when our language and our habits impel us to are still persisting in our minds, and then we're faced with changes, and it's like uncomfortable to change our vocabulary. A singular they? Mon Dieu! It's not possible for an old English major. We're called to jump off that pole over and over again. You know, it reminds me of once when I was about 10, and I would go in the summers. I stayed with my dad in Texas, and I used to watch these people jump and dive off the high board. And I had gotten up enough nerve to jump and dive off the low board, but there was a high board there that I really wanted to do. But it was kind of scary. And I finally got the nerve, climbing up the ladder, you know, and feeling like there was this huge spotlight on me that absolutely everybody at the pool was watching. It was my imagination. And I got up there, and oh my goodness, it is high. This is called the high board. And I started to walk out there, and I thought, I can't do this. This is too high. I'm scared. I just was 10 years old, scared to death. And I turned around, and I saw, you know, there were two people on the ladder, and one waiting at the back. Like, there was, like, no escape. It was so scary. But, you know, the good little soldier that I was, I walked out to the edge, and I thought, I'm going to die now. This is it. It's so far down, right? And then I jumped off. Bubbles. Exhilarating experience. But so hard to do. So hard to jump off. I was ready for another go. That's what it's like. When you go to your first march, protest march, next time you're ready for another go. When you actually call your congressman or your representative, you know, you're calling your city representative to talk about this particular project on your street, and then, okay, I'm ready for another go. I'm calling my senator now. You're willing to speak up at City Hall. Ready for another go. Jump off that pole. And then there's another part of us that doesn't want to jump, that is very comfortable with our way of thinking, the old ideas. Comfortable. But we have to move, to jump off, to go forward. That's what why this koan is repeated so many times. It's not enough to just sit zazen. It's not enough to have seen something and, oh yes, I am one with all things. Yeah, if so. What are you going to do about it? What action can you take? How can you live that insight? There's a wonderful old koan exchange in the Iron Flute that addresses this so beautifully. One of my favorites. A monk asks Hua Yin, how does an enlightened person return to the world of delusion? Hua Yin said, a broken mirror never reflects again, and fallen flowers never return to their branches. How does this an enlightened person return to the world of delusion? Whoa. That's dissonant to our ideas of enlightenment. And Hua Yin says, a broken mirror never reflects again. Fallen flowers never return to their branches. How do we understand that broken mirror? Those flowers on the ground. The mirror is the spotless mind. The spotless mind reflects whatever appears before it. Spotless mind is what looks at, when you look at it, says, it is you. Whether it's a vast blue sky, a laughing child, a demon, hungry ghost. All things return to that great spotless mirror. And in that state of mirror mind, we can experience ourselves as everything. Like a beautiful, pure autumn evening. Clouds float by. The blue sky doesn't obstruct the clouds, nor the clouds obstruct the blue sky. And the next moment, the baby starts crying. Our finances are threatened. Politics are awful. My craving and ignorance returns. How am I then? Pretty dark clouds. And the mirror is cracked. And it doesn't reflect wholeness. Why is that? Because there's no mirror. There's just this life, this muddy water, with happy babies and screaming babies, good politics and awful politics. Being thus, the mirror cracks. Light and shadow don't reflect. We struggle, and we live in the muddy water. We smell the stink of ourselves and others. And even there is realization. There is emptiness. And it rests in that cracked mirror and in those fallen flowers. So an 18th century poet, Soto Zen master, wrote a poem about this koan. He appended it to the end of it. Look, the evening glow brings up the stone wall on the lake. A curling cloud returns to the woods and swallows the whole village. Look, the evening glow brings up the stone wall on the lake. A curling cloud returns to the woods and swallows the whole village. So one moment, this great insight. The evening glow. And the next moment, a cloud swallows the whole village. Or as Dogen put it in Genjo Koan, the Buddha way transcends being and non-being. Therefore, there is life and death, delusion and enlightenment, creatures and Buddhas. However, flowers fall, giving rise to our attachment, and weeds spring up, arousing our antipathy. The Buddha way transcends being and non-being. Yes. And weeds spring up. Flowers fall. Oh. The teaching is how to live in this muddy water. how to act and be in the world, how to jump off that 100-foot pole. How do we manage at this time, in this world, I thought of how I could express that, and I thought of my teacher, Maizumi Roshi. No one embodied the muddy water more than he did. The teaching of realizing and falling. Realizing and falling profoundly. Here's what he wrote. Life and death as nirvana. Don't be picky. Don't choose this or that. However comfortable your life is right now at this moment, yeah, I know some of you have pain. Whatever painful situation you are involved in, consider that as the very life of a Buddha. The very state of nirvana itself. And be it. Just live that life. It doesn't matter whether it is a life of hell, life of the hungry ghost, life of the animal, it's all okay. Just live that life, see? And as a matter of fact, no other way. Where you stand, where you are, that's what your life is, right there, regardless of how painful or how enjoyable it is. That's what it is. That condition never continues forever. You can even say it changes completely in less than a second. I take these teachings to heart that Maizumi Roshi gave us, particularly when I feel dismayed about the conditions of the world. Yes. It's miserable. And yes, there's something that we can do about it. How do we maintain that clarity of mind that allows us to face the changes that we are around us at all times? How can we ride them? That's our question. I don't have an answer, but I have a gatha. Waves of change moving over you, through you, as you lift your arms, you too make the change.